"I see that your lack of respect isn't confined to striking Lord Gyre," the Duchess said. Now he's Lord Gyre. So the men weren't stupid. They were babying Logan. She's probably ordered them not to hit Logan in practice.
Mother, he was never disrespectful to me, and he didn't mean to disrespect you either.
Logan looked from his mother to Solon and found stony gazes on each.
Did you, Lord Tophusen?
Milady, Solon said. My father once told me that there are no lords on the practice field because there are no lords on the battlefield.
Nonsense, she said. A true lord is always a lord. In Scenaria, we understand this. Mother, he means that enemy swords cut nobles as surely as they cut peasants.
Lady Gyre ignored her son and said,
What is it that you want from us, Master Tophusen?
It was a rude thing to ask a guest, and not least for addressing him as a commoner. Solon had been counting on the Gyre's courtesy to give him long enough to figure out that very thing. He had thought that he could watch and wait, dine with the Gyres at every meal, and be afforded a fortnight or two before he announced any intention of his plans. He thought he might like the boy, but this woman, gods! He might be better off with the Jadwin seductress.
Mother, don't you think you're being a little...
She didn't even look at her son. She just raised her palm toward him and stared at Solon, unblinking.
So, that's how it is.
Logan wasn't just her son. For all that he was only a boy, Logan was Katrina Gyre's lord. In that contemptuous gesture, Solon read the family's history. She raised her hand, and her son was still young enough, still inexperienced enough, that he went silent like a good son, rather than punished her like a good lord. In that contempt, and the contempt she'd greeted him with, Solon saw why Duke Gyre had named his son Lord Gyre in his own absence. The Duke couldn't trust his own wife to rule.
"I'm waiting," Lady Gyre said. The chill in her voice made his decision.
Solon didn't like children, but he loathed tyrants.
"Damn you, Dorian."
"I've come here to be Lord Gyre's advisor," he said, smiling warmly.
"Ha! Absolutely not."
"Mother," Logan said, a touch of steel entering his voice.
"No, never," she said.
"In fact, Master Tophusen, I'd like you to leave."
"Mother?"
"Immediately," she said. Solon didn't move. Merely held his knife and two-pronged fork, he was glad he remembered how the Cenarians used the things, over his plate, willing himself not to move.
"When are you going to let Lord Gyre act like Lord Gyre?" he asked her.
"When he's ready, when he's older, and I will not be questioned by some Sethi savage who—"
"Is that what the Duke commanded you when he named his son Lord in his absence?
Let Logan be Lord once he's ready? My father once told me that delayed obedience is really disobedience."
"Guards!" she called.
"Damn it, Mother, stop it!"
Logan stood so abruptly his chair clattered to the ground behind him.
The guards were halfway to Solon's chair. They suddenly looked caught, conspicuous. They looked at each other and slowed, vainly tried to approach quietly, their chain mail jingling with every step.
"Logan, we'll speak about this later," Katrina Gyre said.
"Talon, Bran, escort this man out, now."
"I am the Gyre! Don't touch him!" Logan shouted.
The guards stopped. Katrina's eyes flashed fury.
"How dare you question my authority? You second-guess your mother in front of a stranger? You're an embarrassment, Logan Gyre. You shame your family. Your father made a terrible mistake in trusting you."
Solon felt sick. Logan looked worse. He was shaken, suddenly wavering, about to fold.
The snake. She destroys what she should protect. She shatters her own son's confidence. Logan looked at Talon and Bran. The man looked wretched to be so visibly witnessing Logan's humiliation. Logan shrank, seemed to deflate. I have to do something. My Lord Jire, Solon said, standing and drawing all eyes. I'm terribly sorry. I don't wish to impose on your hospitality. The last thing I would wish is to be an occasion for strife in your family, and indeed, I forgot myself and spoke too frankly to your mother. I'm not always attuned to tempering the truth for Cenarian sensibilities. Lady Jire, I apologize for any offense you or your lord may have taken. Lord Jire, I apologize if you felt I treated you lightly, and will of course take my leave, if you will grant it. A little twist on the if you will grant it. Logan stood straighter. I will not. My lord? Solon painted puzzlement on his face. I found too much tempering and not enough truth in this house, Lord Tophusen, Logan said. You've done nothing to offend me. I'd like you to stay, and I'm sure my mother will do all she can to make you feel welcome. Logan Jire, you will not! Katrina Jire said. Men, Logan said to the guards, loudly, to cut her off. Lady Jire is tired and overwrought. Escort her to her chambers. I'd appreciate it if one of you would watch her door this night in case she requires anything. We will all dine in the usual room in the morning. Solon loved it. Logan had just confined his mother to her chambers and put a guard on the door to keep her there until morning, all without giving her an avenue for complaint. This boy will be formidable. Will be? He already is. And I've just chained myself to him. It wasn't a comfortable thought. He hadn't even decided to stay. Actually, half an hour ago, he'd decided not to decide for a few weeks. Now, he was Logan's. Did you know this would happen, Dorian? Dorian didn't believe in coincidences, but Solon had never had his friend's faith. Now, faith or no faith, he was committed. It made his neck feel tight, like wearing a slave collar two sizes too small. The rest of an excellent meal passed in silence. Solon begged his lord's leave and went looking for the nearest inn that served Sethi wine. Chapter 10. Her face was destroyed. Azoth had once seen a man kicked square in the face by a horse. He died, wheezing on broken teeth and blood. Dahlgirl's face was worse. Azoth looked away, but Durzo grabbed a handful of his hair and turned him back. Look, damn you, look! This is what you've done, boy. This is what hesitation costs. When I say kill, you kill. Not tomorrow, not 5 days later. You kill that second. No hesitation, no doubts, no second thoughts. Obedience. Do you understand the word? I know better than you do. You know nothing. You are nothing. This is what you are. You are weakness. You are filth. You are the blood bubbling out of that little girl's nose. Sobs burst from Azoth's throat. He thrashed and tried to turn away, but Durzo's grip was steel. No, look! This is what you've done. This is your fault, your failure. Your debtor did this. A debtor shouldn't do anything. A debtor is dead. Not 5 days from now, now. A debtor is dead as soon as you take the contract. Do you understand? Azoth threw up, and still Durzo held his hair, turning him so his vomit wouldn't splatter on Dahlgirl. When he was done, Durzo turned him around and let go. But Azoth turned away, not even wiping the puke from his lips. He looked at Dahlgirl. She couldn't last long. Every breath was labored. Blood welled, dribbled, dripped, slid onto the sheets, onto the floor. He stared until her face disappeared, until he was only seeing red angles and curves where once that doll pretty face had been. The red angles went white hot and branded his memory, searing him. He held perfectly still, so the scars on his mind would give a perfect image of what he'd done, would perfectly match the lacerations on her face. Durzo didn't say a word. It didn't matter. He didn't matter. Azoth didn't matter. All that mattered was the bloody little girl lying on bloody sheets. He felt something inside collapsing, something squeezing the breath out of his body. Part of him was glad. Part of him cheered as he felt himself being crushed, compacted into insignificance, into oblivion. This was what he deserved. But then it stopped. He blinked and noticed there were no more tears in his eyes. He wouldn't be crushed. Something in him refused to be crushed. He turned to Durzo. "If you save her, I'm yours forever." "You don't understand, boy. You've already failed. Besides, she's dying. There's nothing you can do. She's worthless now. A girl on the street is worth exactly what she can get for whoring. Saving her life is no kindness. She won't thank you for it." "I'll find you when he's dead," Azoth said. "You've already failed." "You gave me a week. It's only been 5 days." Durzo shook his head. "By the night angels. So be it. But if you come without proof, I'll end you." Azoth didn't answer. He was already walking away. She wasn't dying fast, but she was clearly dying. Durzo couldn't help but have a certain detached professional rage. It had been sloppy, cruel work. With the horrible wounds on her face, it was obvious that she had been intended to live, and live with hideous scars that would forever shame her. But instead she was dying, wheezing out her life through a broken, bloody nose. There was nothing he could do for her either. That was quickly evident. He'd killed both of the bigs who had been guarding her after the butchery, but he suspected that neither of them had been the cutter. They had both seemed a little too horrified at the evil they were part of. Some part of Durzo that still had a shred of decency demanded he go kill the Twist, who had done this immediately. But he'd tended to the little girl first. She was lying on a low cot in one of the smaller safe houses he owned in the Warrens. He cleaned her up as well as he could. He knew a lot about preserving life. He'd learned that as he learned about killing. It was just a matter of approaching the line between life and death from the opposite side. So it was quickly apparent that her wounds were beyond his skills. She'd been kicked, and she was bleeding inside. That would kill her, even if the blood she was losing from her face didn't. "Life is empty," he told her still form. "Life is worthless, meaningless. Life is pain and suffering. I'm sparing you if I let you die. You'll be ugly now. They'll laugh at you, stare at you, point at you, shudder. You'll overhear their questions. You'll know their self-serving pity. You'll be a curiosity, a horror. Your life is worth nothing now." He had no choice. He had to let her die. It was only kind. Not just, perhaps, but kind. Not just. The thought ate at him, and her ugliness and blood, her wheezing, ate at him. Maybe he needed to save her, for the boy. Maybe she would be just the goad to move him. Mama Kay said Azoth might be too kind. Maybe from this, Azoth would learn to act first, act fast, kill anyone who threatened him. The boy had already waited too long. It was a risk either way. The boy had sworn himself to Durzo if he saved her, but what would having this cripple around do to a boy? She'd be a living reminder of failure. Durzo couldn't allow Azoth to destroy himself over a girl. He wouldn't allow it. The wheezing decided him. He couldn't kill her himself, and he wasn't such a coward that he'd run away and let her die alone. Fine. He'd do what he could to save her. If she died, it wasn't his fault. If she lived, he'd deal with Azoth. But who the hell could save her? Solon stared at the dregs of his sixth glass of, to be charitable, lousy Sethi Red. My honest vintner on the island would have been ashamed to serve such dreck at their least favorite nephew's coming of age. And dregs? The glass must have been at least half dregs. Someone needed to tell the innkeeper this wine wasn't meant to be aged. It was supposed to be served within a year, at the outside. Kaido wouldn't have tolerated it. So he told the innkeeper, and realized from the look on the man's face that he'd already told him, at least twice. Well, to hell with it. He was paying good money for bad wine, and he kept hoping after a few glasses he might not notice just how bad it was. He was wrong. Every glass just made him a little more irritable about the poor quality. Why would someone ship a bad wine all the way across the Great Sea? Did they actually make a profit on it? As he put down another silver, he realized it was because of homesick fools like himself that they made a profit on it. The thought made him sick. Or maybe that was the wine. Someday he'd have to convince Lord Gyre to invest in Sethi wines. He slumped further in his chair and waved for another glass, ignoring the few other patrons and the bored innkeeper. This was really an inexcusable exercise in self-pity, the likes of which he would have whipped out of Logan Gyre if he saw him indulging in something so juvenile. But he'd traveled so far, and for what? He remembered Dorian's smile, that mischievous little grin the girls never stopped cooing over. "The kingdom rests in your hands, Solon. What do I care about Cenaria? It's half a world away." "I didn't say the kingdom was Cenaria, did I?" That damn grin again. Then it faded. "Solon, you know I wouldn't ask this if there were any other way." "You don't see everything. There's got to be another way. At least tell me what I'm supposed to do. Dorian, you know what I'd be leaving. You know what this will cost me."
"I do," Dorian said, his aristocratic features showing the pain a great lord might feel when sending men to their deaths to accomplish some necessary goal. "He needs you, Solon."
Solon's memories were abruptly cut short with the jab of a dagger into his spine. He sat bolt upright, sloshing the dregs of his seventh glass onto the table.
"That's enough, friend,"
a low voice said into his ear.
"I know what you are, and I need you to come with me."
"Or else?"
Solon asked, dizzy. Who could know that he was here?
"Yes. Or else."
Amused.
"Or else what? You're going to kill me in front of 5 witnesses?
Solon asked. He rarely drank more than 2 glasses of wine at any time. He was too impaired for this. Who the hell was this man?
"And you're supposed to be smart,"
the man said.
"If I know what you are and still threaten you, do you think I lack the will to kill you?"
He had Solon there.
"And what's to stop me?"
The dagger jabbed his spine again.
"Enough talk. You've been poisoned. You do what I say and I'll give you the antidote. Does that answer the rest of your questions?"
"Actually..."
"You'll know you're really poisoned because any time now your neck and armpits will start itching."
"Aha."
"Eriamu root?"
Solon asked, trying to think. Was he bluffing? Why would he bluff?
"Plus a few other things. Last warning."
His shoulder started itching.
Damn!
He could have taken care of Eriamu root by itself, but this...
"What do you want?"
"Head outside. Don't turn, don't say anything." Solon walked to the door, almost trembling. The man had said, "What you are," not "who you are." That might have referred to his being Sethi, but his other comment obviously didn't. The Sethi might be famous or infamous for many things, but rightly or wrongly, intelligence wasn't one of them. He'd barely touched the street when he felt the dagger jab his spine again. A hand drew his sword from the scabbard.
"That won't be necessary," Solon said. Was that his imagination, or was his neck itching?
"Show me what you want."
The prisoner led him around the building where two horses were waiting. Together they rode south, and then across the Vanden Bridge. They were swallowed by the Warrens, and though Solon didn't think the man had been taking turns solely to get him lost, he soon was.
Damn wine.
Finally, they stopped in front of one tiny shack among many. He dismounted unsteadily and followed the man inside. The prisoner wore dark clothes and a voluminous gray-black cloak with its hood up. All Solon could see was that he was tall, obviously athletic, and probably thin. The man nodded toward the door, and Solon stepped inside. The smell of blood hit him instantly. The little girl was lying on a low bed, barely breathing, barely bleeding, her face a gory mess. Solon turned.
"She's dying. There's nothing I can do."
"I did what I could," the man said.
"Now you do what you do. I've left all the tools you may need."
"Whatever you think I am, you're wrong. I'm no healer."
"She dies. You die."
Solon felt the weight of the man's eyes on him. Then the poisoner turned and left. Solon looked at the closed door and felt despair rising like twin waves of darkness coming from each side. Then he shook himself. Enough. So he was tired, still drunk, poisoned, itchy, and never had been much good at healing to begin with. Dorian had said that someone here needed him, hadn't he? So surely Solon couldn't die yet. Unless, of course, just making Logan stand up to his mother was all that Solon had been needed for.
Well, that's the problem with prophecy, isn't it? You never know.
Solon knelt by the little girl and began working. Chapter 11. Mama Kay crossed her legs in the absently provocative way that only a veteran courtesan could. Some people fidgeted habitually. Mama Kay seduced habitually. With a figure most of her girls could only envy, she could pass for 30. But Mama Kay was unashamed of her age. She'd thrown a huge party for her own 40th birthday. Few of those who'd told her she'd outshone her own courtesans had been lying, for Guinevere Kirenna had been the courtesan of an age. Durzo knew of a dozen duels that had been fought over her, and at least as many lords had proposed to her. But Guinevere Kirenna would be chained to no man. She knew too well all the men she knew.
"He really does have you nervous, this Azoth, doesn't he?"
Mama Kay said.
"No."
"Liar."
Mama Kay smiled, all full red lips and perfect teeth.
"What gave me away?"
Durzo asked, not really interested. He was nervous, though. Things had spun suddenly out of control.
"You were staring at my breasts. You only look at me like I'm a woman when you're too distracted to keep your guard up."
She smiled again.
"Don't worry. I think it's sweet."
"Don't you ever stop?"
"You're a simpler man than you like to think, Durzo Blint. You really only have 3 refuges when the world overwhelms you. Do you want me to tell you what they are, my big, strong, wet boy?"
"Is this the kind of thing you talk about with clients?"
It was a cheap shot. Moreover, it was the kind of comment a whore would have been hit with enough times that she was well armored against it now. She didn't even blink.
"No," she said.
But there was a rather pathetically endowed baron who liked to have me pretend I was his nursemaid, and when he was naughty, I'd—
Spare me.
It was a loss to have her stop, but she'd have gone on for 10 minutes and not skipped a single detail.
Then what do you want, Durzo?
Now you're staring at your hands again. He was staring at his hands. Guinevere could be more trouble than she was worth, but her advice was always good. She was the most perceptive person he knew, and smarter than he was by a long shot.
I want to know what to do, Guinevere.
After a long moment of silence, he looked up from his hands.
About the boy? She asked. I don't think he has it in him.
When Azoth came around the corner, Rat was sitting on the back porch of the ruin the guild called home. Azoth's heart seized at the sight of the ugly boy. Rat was alone, waiting for him. He was spinning a short sword on its point. Spots of rust interplayed with the winking of the waning moon on bright steel as it spun. In this unguarded moment, Rat's face seemed as mutable as that spinning steel. One moment the monster Azoth had always known, the next moment an overgrown, scared child. Azoth shuffled forward, more confused and frightened by that glimpse of humanity than soothed. He'd seen too much. He came forward through the stench of the alley that the whole guild used as their toilet. He didn't even care to watch where he put his feet. He was hollow. When he looked up, Roth was standing, that familiar, cruel grin on his lips, the rusty sword pointing at Azoth's throat.
"That's far enough," Rat said.
Azoth flinched.
"Rat?"
he said, and swallowed.
"No closer," Rat said. "You've got a shiv. Give it to me."
Azoth was on the verge of tears. He took the shiv from his belt and held it out, handle first.
"Please,"
he said.
"I don't want to die. I'm sorry. I'll do whatever you want. Just don't hurt me."
Rat took the shiv.
"I'll give him that he's smart," Durzo said. "But it takes more than intelligence. You've seen him here with all the other guild rats. Does he have that?"
He snapped his fingers, unable to find the word.
"Most of them I only see in the winter. They sleep on the streets the rest of the year. I give them a roof, Durzo, not a home."
"But you've seen him."
"I've seen him."
She would never forget him.
"Guinevere, is he cunning?"
Rat tucked the shiv in his belt and patted Azoth down. He found no other weapons. His fear dissolved and left only exultation.
"Don't hurt you?" he asked.
He backhanded Azoth. It was almost ridiculous. Azoth practically flew from the force of the blow. He sprawled in the dirt and got up slowly, his hands and knees bleeding.
"He's so small. How did I ever fear this?"
Azoth's eyes bled fear. He was crying, making little whimpers in the darkness. Rat said,
"I'm gonna have to hurt you, Azoth. You've made me. I didn't want it to be this way. I wanted you with me."
It was all too easy. Azoth had come back to the guild already destroyed. Rat didn't like it. He wanted to do something to seal Azoth's humiliation. He stepped forward and grabbed Azoth's hair. He pulled him up to his knees, enjoying the little cries of pain the boy gave. He owed what would come next to Neff. Rat didn't particularly like boys more than girls. He didn't see much difference. But Rat never would have thought of this as a weapon if Neff hadn't told him how much it broke a prisoner's spirit to be forced. It had become one of Rat's favorites.
Anyone could make a girl scared. But the boys in the guild feared him more than they had ever feared anyone. They looked at Bim, or Whis, or Pod, or Jarl, and they melted. And the more he had done it, the more it stirred him. Just looking at Azoth now, on his knees, eyes round with fear, made Rat's loins stir. There was nothing like watching the fire of defiance roar high and then, quickly, or over many nights, die, flare up again, and die forever. "A wet boy has to lose himself," Durzo said. "No, abandon himself. To be a perfect killer, he has to wear the perfect skin for each kill. Guinevere, you understand, don't you?" She recrossed her long legs. "Understanding is what sets courtesans apart from whores. I get under the skin of every man to walk through my doors. If I know a man, I know how to please him. I know how to manipulate him so that he'll try to buy my love and become competitive with others trying to do the same thing, but not become jealous of them. A wet boy has to know his debtors like that," Durzo said. "And you don't think Azoth can do that?" "No, I think he can," Durzo said. "But after you know a man or a woman like that, after you wear their skin and walk a few miles in it, you can't help but love them."
"But that's not real love,"
Guinevere said quietly.
"And when you love them, that's the moment a wet boy has to kill. And that's what Azoth can't do. He's too soft. Even now, even after what happened to his little friend, even now."
"You are right,"
Azoth said through his tears. He looked up at Rat standing over him, moonlight throwing his shadow over Azoth.
"I knew what you wanted, and I wanted it too. I just couldn't. But I'm ready now."
Rat looked down at him, a faint light of suspicion blooming in his eyes.
"I found a special place for us." Azoth stopped. "But it doesn't matter. We can do it here. We should do it here."
Rat's eyes were hard but unreadable. Azoth stood slowly, holding on to Rat's hips.
"Let's just do it here. Let the whole guild hear us. Let everyone know."
His whole body was shaking, and there was no way to hide it. Revulsion was arcing through him like lightning, but he kept his face hopeful, pretending his trembling was pure, naive uncertainty.
"I can't. I can't. Let him kill me. Anything but—"
If he thought, if he considered anything for another second, he was lost. Azoth reached a trembling hand up to Rat's cheek, and stood, then stood on tiptoe, and kissed him.
"No," Rat said, slapping him. "We do this my way."
"To ply this trade, a man has to value nothing. Has to sacrifice."
Durzo trailed off.
"Everything?"
Guinevere asked.
"Like you've done so well?
My sister might have words about that."
"Vonda's dead because I didn't,"
Durzo said. He wouldn't meet Guinevere's gaze. Out the window, night was just beginning to lose its hold on the city. Looking at Durzo there, his hard, pockmarked face glowing yellow sorrow in the lamplight, Guinevere softened.
"So you fell in love, Durzo. Not even wet boys are immune. Love is a madness."
"Love is failure. I lost everything because I failed."
"And what do you do if Azoth fails?"
Guinevere asked.
"I let him die. Or I kill him."
"You need him," she said gently. "You told me yourself that he'll call a Kakari to you."
Before Durzo could say anything, there was a knock at the door. "Come,"
Mama Kay said. One of Guinevere's maids, obviously a former courtesan herself, now too old for the brothels, poked her head in the door.
"There's a boy to see you, milady. His name is Azoth."
"Show him in," Guinevere said. Durzo looked at her. "What the hell is he doing here?" "I don't know." Guinevere was amused. "I suppose that if he's the kind of boy you can mold into a wet boy, he can't be without certain resources."
"Damn! I left him not 3 hours ago," Durzo said.
"So?"
"So I told him I'd kill him if I saw him without proof. You know I can't make idle threats."
Durzo sighed.
"You might have been right, but it's out of my hands."
"He's not here for you, Durzo. He's here to see me. So why don't you do your little shadow thing and disappear?"
"My little shadow thing?"
"Now, Durzo." The door opened, and a bleeding, wretched boy was shown in. But even beat up as he was, Guinevere could have picked him out from 1,000 guild rats. This guild rat had fire in his eyes. He stood straight, even though his face was abraded, his mouth and nose dribbling blood. He looked at her unabashedly, but was either young enough or smart enough that he looked at her eyes rather than at her cleavage.
"You see more than most, don't you?"
Mama Kay said. It wasn't a question.
He didn't even nod. He was too young to be mocking her tendency to state questions, so there was something else in that flat stare he was giving her.
"Of course."
"And you've seen something terrible, haven't you?"
Azoth just looked at her with big eyes, trembling. He was a picture of the naked innocence that died every day in the Warrens. It stirred something in her that she'd thought long dead. Without so much as a word, she knew she could offer the boy a mother's arms, a mother's embrace, a safe place. She could give a refuge, even to this child of the Warrens, who'd probably never been held in his life. A soft look, a touch on his cheek, and a word, and he would collapse into her arms and cry. And what will Durzo do? Vonda had barely been dead 3 months. He'd lost more than lover when she'd died, and Guinevere didn't know if he'd ever recover. Will he understand that Azoth's tears don't make him weak? To be honest with herself, Guinevere knew that holding Azoth wouldn't be just for Azoth. She couldn't remember the last time she'd held someone who hadn't paid for the privilege. And what will Durzo do if he sees real love now? Will it make him human? Or will he tell himself Azoth is too weak and kill him, rather than admit that he needs him? It all took her just a second to read the boy and weigh her options. There was too much at stake. She couldn't do it.
"So, Azoth," she asked, folding her arms under her breasts,
"who'd you kill?" The blood drained from Azoth's face. He blinked as fear suddenly cleared his eyes of the tears that were threatening.
"First kill, too," Mama Kay said.
"Good."
"I don't know what you're talking about," Azoth said, too quickly.
"I know what a killer looks like."
Her voice was sharp.
"So who did you kill?"
"I need to talk to Durzo Blint. Please, where is he?"
"Right here," Blint said, behind Azoth. Azoth flinched. "And since you've found me," Blint continued, "someone better be dead."
"He..." Azoth looked at Mama Kay, obviously wondering if he could speak in front of her.
"He is."
"Where's the body?" Blint demanded.
It's in the river."
"So there's no proof. How convenient."
"Here's your proof!"
Azoth shouted, suddenly furious. He threw what he was holding at Durzo. Durzo snatched it out of the air.
"You call this proof?" Durzo asked.
He opened his hand, and Mama Kay saw he held a bloody ear. I call it an ear. Ever known a man to die from losing an ear, Gwyn? Mama Kay said, Don't you put me in the middle of this, Durzo Blint.
I can show you the body,
Azoth said. You said it's in the river.
It is.
Durzo hesitated.
Damn you, Durzo. Go,
Mama Kay said.
You owe him that much.
The sun sat fully above the horizon when they arrived at the boat repair shop. Durzo went inside alone and came out 10 minutes later, rolling down a wet sleeve. He didn't look down at Azoth as he asked, Son, he was naked. Did he?
I got the noose around his foot before he could. I killed him before.
In cold and distant tones, Azoth told him everything. The night was fading like a bad dream, and what he remembered doing, he couldn't believe he had done. It must have been someone else. As he told his story, Blint looked at him in a way no one ever had before. It might have been pity. Azoth didn't know. He'd never seen pity before.
Did Doll Girl make it?
Azoth asked. Durzo put his hands on Azoth's shoulders and looked into his eyes. I don't know. She looked bad. I got the best person I could find to try to save her, kid. Blint looked away, blinking. I'm going to give you one more chance.
Another test?
Azoth's shoulders slumped. His voice was flat, deflated. He couldn't even spare the energy for outrage.
You can't. I did everything you said.
No more tests. I'm going to give you one more chance to reconsider. You've done everything I asked, but this isn't the life you want. You want off the street? I'll give you a bag of silver and apprentice you to a fletcher or an herbalist on the east side. But if you come with me, you trade everything for it. Once you do this work, you'll never be the same. You will be alone. You will be different. Always. And that's not the worst of it. I'm not trying to scare you. Well, maybe I am. But I'm not exaggerating. I'm not lying to you. The worst of it, kid, is this. Relationships are ropes. Love is a noose. If you come with me, you must forswear love. Do you know what that means? Azoth shook his head. It means you can bang as many women as you want. But you can never love one. I won't allow you to ruin yourself over a girl. Durzo's voice filled with violence. His hands were claws on Azoth's shoulders, his eyes predator's eyes. Do you understand?
What about Doll Girl?
Azoth asked. He must have been tired. He knew mentioning her was a mistake before he finished the question. You're 10, 11 years old? You think you love her?
No.
Too late. I'll let you know if she lives, but if you come with me, Azoth, you will never talk to her again. You understand? You apprentice to my Fletcher or the herbalist? You can see her as much as you want. Please, kid, take it. This might be your last chance for happiness.
Happiness? I just don't want to be afraid anymore.
Blint wasn't afraid. People were afraid of him. They whispered his name in awe. You follow me now, Blint said. And by the night angels, you belong to me. Once we start, you become a wet boy or you die. The Sakage can't afford to do it any other way. Or you stay and I'll find you in a few days and take you to your new master. Blint stood and brushed his still damp hands as if washing them of the matter. He turned abruptly and strode into the shadows of an alley. Stepping out from the niche he'd been standing in, Azoth looked down the street toward the guild home, 100 paces away. Maybe he didn't need to go with Blint now. He'd killed Rat. Maybe he could go back and everything would be all right.
Go back to what? I'm still too little to be the guild head. Jalaliel's still dying.
Jarl and Doll Girl were still both maimed. There would be no hero's welcome for Azoth. Roth or some other big would take over the guild, and Azoth would be afraid again, as if nothing had ever happened.
But he promised me an apprenticeship.
Yes, he'd promised. But everyone knew you didn't trust adults. Blint was still confusing. It didn't sound right, how he talked about Doll Girl. But just now, Azoth had seen something in the wet boy. There was something in him that cared. There was something in the legendary killer that wanted the best for Azoth.
Azoth didn't believe that Doll Girl was worthless just because she wasn't pretty anymore. He didn't know if he could kill again. He didn't know what Blint would do to him or why. But whatever that something was that he had seen in the wet boy, it was far more precious to Azoth than all his doubts. Down the street, Jarl stepped out of the guild home. He saw Azoth, and even from that distance, Azoth saw him smile, white teeth brilliant against his Ladeshian skin. From the blood on the back porch and Rat's absence, they must have guessed that he was dead. Jarl waved and started hurrying toward Azoth in the dazzling sunlight. Azoth turned his back on his best friend and stepped into the shadow's embrace.
Chapter 12. Welcome Home. Master Blint's voice was tinged with sarcasm, but Azoth didn't hear it. The word home held magic. He'd never had a home. Durzo Blint's house crouched deep in the warrens, underneath the ruins of an old temple. Azoth stared in open wonder. From the outside, it looked like there was nothing here, but Blint had several rooms, none of them small.
"You'll learn to fight here," Blint said, locking, unlocking, and relocking each of three bolts on the door. The room was wide and deep, and crammed with equipment, various targets, pads filled with straw, and every kind of practice weapon, beams suspended above the ground, strange tripods with wood appendages, cables, ropes, hooks, and ladders.
"And you'll learn to use those." Blint pointed to the weapons lining the walls, each neatly outlined in white paint. There were weapons of every size and shape, from single-edged daggers to enormous cleavers. Blades straight or curving, one or two-edged, one or two-handed, with different colors and patterns of steel. Swords with hooks, notches, and barbs. Then there were maces, flails, axes, warhammers, clubs, staves, pole arms, sickles, spears, slings, darts, garrots, short bows, long bows, crossbows. The next room was just as amazing. Disguises and equipment lined the walls, each painstakingly outlined. But here, there were also tables covered with books and vials. The books bristled with bookmarks. The jars covered a huge table and were filled with seeds, flowers, leaves, mushrooms, liquids, and powders. "These are the basic ingredients for most of the poisons in the world. As soon as Mama Kay teaches you how to read, you'll read and memorize most of what's in these books. The poisoner's art is an art. You will master it."
"Yes, sir."
"In a couple of years, when your talent quickens, I'll teach you to use magic."
"Magic?"
Azoth was feeling more exhausted by the second.
"You think I accepted you because of your looks? Magic is essential to what we do. No talent, no wet boy."
Azoth started to totter, but before he could collapse, Master Blint grabbed him by the back of his ragged tunic and guided him to the next room. There was only one pallet, but Blint didn't set him on it, but guided him instead to a spot by a small fireplace.
"First kills are hard," Blint said.
He seemed to be speaking from far away. Sometime this week, you'll probably cry. Do it when I'm gone.
I won't cry,
Azoth vowed. Sure. Now sleep. Life is empty. When we take a life, we aren't taking anything of value. Wet boys are killers. That's all we do. That's all we are. There are no poets in the bitter business, Blint said. He must have left while Azoth slept, because Azoth now held a sword small enough for an 11-year-old in his fist, feeling awkward. Now attack me, Blint said.
What?
The side of Blint's sword smashed into Azoth's head. I order. You obey. No hesitations. Got it?
Yes, sir.
Azoth climbed to his feet and picked up the sword. He rubbed his head. Attack, Blint said. Azoth did. Wildly. Blint deflected his blows or stepped to one side so that Azoth fell over from the force of his own swings. All the while, Blint spoke. You aren't making art. You're making corpses. Dead is dead. He parried quickly, and Azoth's blade went skittering across the floor. Grab that. Blint walked after Azoth and engaged him again. Don't play with your kills. Don't go for the one-thrust beautiful finish. Cut someone 20 times and let them collapse from blood loss, then finish them. Don't make it beautiful. You aren't making art, you're making corpses. And so, the lessons continued. Physical action with a continuously running monologue. Each lesson summarized, demonstrated, and summarized again. In the study. Never taste death. Every vial, every jar in here is death. If you're working with death, you'll get powders, pastes, and salves on your hands. Never lick the death on your fingers. Never touch death to your eyes. You'll wash your hands with this liquor, and then this water, always into this basin, which is used for nothing else, and will only be emptied where I show you. Never taste death. On the street. Embrace the shadows. Breathe the silence. Be ordinary. Be invisible. Mark the man. Know every out. When he made mistakes, Blint didn't yell. If Azoth didn't block correctly, he was merely drawing his wage when the wood practice sword crashed into his shin. If he couldn't recite the lesson of the day and expand on any that Blint asked about, he got cuffed for every one he forgot. It was all even-handed. It was all fair. But Azoth never relaxed. If he failed too much, just as dispassionately as Master Blint cuffed Azoth, he might kill him. All it would take would be for Blint to not pull one blow short. Azoth wouldn't even know he'd failed until he found himself dying. More than once he wanted to quit. But there was no quitting. More than once he wanted to kill Blint, but trying would mean death. More than once, he wanted to cry. But he'd vowed he wouldn't. And he didn't.
Mama Kay, who's Vonda?
Azoth asked. After his reading lessons, she took a cup of utai before they started on politics, history, and court etiquette. After he trained with Blint all morning, he studied with her through the afternoon. He was exhausted and sore all the time, but he slept through the whole of every night and woke warm, not shivering. The gnawing voice and debilitating weakness of hunger was only a memory. He never complained. If he did, they might make him go back. Mama Kay didn't answer immediately.
That is a very delicate question. Does that mean you won't tell me?
It means I don't want to. But I will because you may need to know, and the man who should tell you won't. She closed her eyes for a moment, and when she continued, her voice was flat. Vonda was Durzo's lover. Durzo had a treasure,
and Kalador's God-King wanted it. You remember what I taught you about Kalador? Azoth nodded. Mama Kay opened her eyes and lifted her eyebrows. He grimaced, then recited. Kalador is our northern neighbor. They've always said Cenaria and most of Mitkryu is theirs, but they can't take it because Duke Gyre and his men guard Screaming Winds. The pass at Screaming Winds is highly defensible, Mama Kay suggested. And the prize? When Azoth looked at her blankly, she said, Kalador could go around the mountains the long way, but they won't because...
Because we're not really worth it, and the Sakage runs everything.
Cenaria is corrupt. The treasury is empty. The Siurans raid us from the south, and the Li Nort holds our eastern lands, and they hate Kalidorans even more than they hate most mages, so yes, we're not worth the taking.
Isn't that what I said?
You were right, but not for all the right reasons, she said. She sipped her utai again, and Azoth thought she'd forgotten his original question, or that she hoped he had. Then she said, To get Durzo's treasure, the God-King kidnapped Vonda and proposed a trade. The treasure for Vonda's life. Durzo decided that his treasure was more important, so he let her die. But something happened, and Durzo lost his treasure, too. So Vonda died for no reason whatsoever.
You're mad at him, Azoth said.
Mama Kay's voice had no inflection whatever, and her eyes were dead. It was a great treasure, Azoth. If I were Durzo, I might have done the same. Except for one thing. She looked away. Vonda was my little sister.
Chapter 13. Solon caught the edge of the halberd with his long sword and heaved it aside, then stepped in and kicked one of Logan's men in the stomach. A few years ago, that kick would have reached his helmet. He supposed he should be thankful that he could beat the Gyre's guards at all. But that was what came of having as his best friends a prophet and a second echelon blade master. Fear would have words about how fat I've let myself get. And slow.
My lord,
Wendell North said, approaching the fighting men. Logan stepped away from a match he was losing, and Solon followed him. The steward gave Solon a flat stare, but didn't protest his presence.
My lord, your mother has just returned.
Oh? Where was she, Wendell? Master North? Logan asked. With the men, he did better. But acting the lord to a man who had probably been in charge of spanking him a few weeks ago was beyond Logan right now. Solon didn't allow himself to grin, though. Let Lady Gyre undermine Logan's authority. He would have no part of that.
She spoke with the queen.
Why?
She put forth a petition for guardianship.
What?
Solon asked.
She is asking the crown to appoint her to be duchess until the duke returns, or until my lord reaches the age of majority, which, in this country, Master Tofusen is 21.
But we have my father's letters appointing me, Logan said. The king can't interfere with a house's appointments unless they're guilty of treason. Wendell North pushed his glasses up his nose nervously.
That's not altogether true, my lord.
Solon looked back at the guards, who were beginning to quit sparring and drift closer.
Back to it, dogs!
They jumped to obey.
The king may appoint a guardian to an underage lord if the previous lord of that house hasn't left the necessary provisions,
Wendell said.
It comes down to this. Your father left two copies of the letter appointing you lord in his absence. He gave one to your mother, and the other to me. As soon as I heard where Lady Katrina went, I checked my copy, which I kept under lock and key. It's gone. Forgive me, Lord Gyre.
The steward flushed. I swear I had no part in this. I thought I had the only key.
What did the queen say? Solon asked.